Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Today we have Bryn Conroy. She is the founder of FemFrugality.com and also the author of the book, The Feminist Financial Handbook. So go ahead and check that out. But before we get to our interview, we do need to do a quick message from our sponsor. Are you looking for a better way to invest through market turmoil? Consider Betterment. Betterment is a robo-advisor that uses modern portfolio theory to help you manage your portfolio and reach your financial goals. With Betterment, you don't have to worry about what the market is doing day to day. Instead, use the stock market to help consistently build wealth. For more information, visit moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment. I use Betterment to manage my own retirement fund and my travel fund, but that doesn't mean it's right for you. Do your due diligence. Look it up for yourself, moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment. All right. So let's get to our guest. Welcome to the show, Bryn.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have children with special needs. That's correct?
Yeah. One.
So you have a child with special needs. And how does that kind of change the way you do your financial planning, the change the way you plan for future investments?
It changes a lot. And I want to be completely honest and upfront with everybody listening. I'm not 100% sure I have everything figured out yet.
None of us do, honey. None of us do in this life.
But one of the things that really keeps me up at night is knowing that if anything ever happened to me, or I mean, hopefully someday my child will live on after I'm gone, knowing that perhaps with my child, we don't specifically know, but there perhaps may be a need to have a constant custodian, both over physical and medical needs and over financial needs. And I feel like there will never be enough money for me to be prepared. A major reason that I don't join the FIRE movement or I don't pursue that as a goal is because it seems extremely unrealistic to me, and I don't want to pursue something that has kind of an infinite end. Being in America right now, especially, I don't want to get political, but unfortunately, my child's healthcare has been politicized to some extent. There are very real threats to the safety nets that we have in place that, quite frankly, already are not enough. And so if those things do dilapidate or deteriorate, my child is going to have even more of a financial need in the future. So my goals are pretty much to squirrel away as much as I humanly possibly can, while also allowing myself enough time to allocate to those extra needs that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. So my work schedule is abbreviated as well. And that's something else that my household deals with, is I'm the sole income earner.
And that's a really good point that you make, that, you know, a lot of the time we like to say, oh, we've got the social safety net. Oh, we can rely on some of these other things. But like you said, some of the stuff has been politicized to the point where you can't guarantee that it's going to happen. We live in the wealthiest country in the history of humankind. And if your child has special needs, it's for the most part going to be on you in the future, because you can't always be sure that things are going to be taken care of.
Right. And even if there is some concern too about if I leave my child essentially to the state or without a custodian, or my line dies out and there's no one to take care of her, where will she end up? And I know I can say that right now in our country, there are state facilities where care is inadequate, and there's nobody to advocate for these people because they're there because they've lost all their family. It's kind of one of those things where, like, my financial planning is just save everything so that my child will never have to deal with that.
Right. So now you talk about saving everything. You talk about figuring out how to do that. What are some of the tools that you use? What are some of the maybe trust accounts or investment accounts that you use to kind of help maximize that saving everything? how are you going to maximize all of that?
Yes. And I don't want anyone to get too excited when I talk about saving everything. Like I said, I work abbreviated hours, and I actually started investing a little bit later. I got to a point where I had that it shouldn't be considered disposable, but I mean, essentially it is the disposable income to throw into a retirement account. So I actually do not have enough assets yet, or do not max out my retirement accounts to a point where I feel that an ABLE account or a special needs trust is necessary or necessarily financially viable. In the case of special needs trusts, I don't know how many financial advisors would take me on with the amount of assets that I have. I know that the ones that I've spoken to locally, I need to build up my nest egg a little bit further before I can even begin having that conversation and have them start managing those assets for me.
Now, that's interesting. Now, you talked about an ABLE account or a special needs trust. What are some of the characteristics of these types of accounts, and how can they help people, and how can they help provide for somebody with special needs?
ABLE accounts are probably, if you have a young child, especially because they operate like 529 accounts, an ABLE account allows you to stash away money for them and you don't have to disclose it on asset tests. So if your child is able to collect SSI in your state, they'll still be able to receive those benefits, even though you have savings above and beyond what maybe is allowed per SSI. Or same thing with some states actually have asset tests for Medicaid if you have a disability, a surprising number of states actually. So an ABLE account allows you to kind of hide that money away. Then if your kid goes to college, they can use it for college. And if they don't, you can use it for their everyday needs, even things basic like paying rent. If you are talking about saving long-term for your child for after you're gone, a special needs trust is probably a good route to take. It legally sets up what your child will inherit, how it will be distributed, who will manage those assets. And sometimes I believe there are nonprofits, 501c3s that work closely with state agencies who are able to set up those special needs trusts if you do not have a huge portfolio or anything. So if you're in a situation like me, oftentimes though, that means that the nonprofit is taking on the position of trustee. So they'll be managing the assets for your kid. For me, that's a little bit iffy because even if I trust someone in an agency today, like 40 years down the road, I don't know if I will still have that same faith. But that is one way to do it, kind of lower cost if it's available in your region and your state.
Right. And so now, and also when you're talking about trusts in general, not just special needs trusts, but when you're talking about trusts in general, I mean, this is also a way for you to pass on your wealth, your assets, without having, and in most cases, in most states, you can avoid probate, right?
Oh,
so you
yes.
can avoid some of the problems and costs and expenses that come with probate. So trusts can be a really good tool, not just for special needs, but trusts can also be very useful when you want to pass down like maybe your assets to your family or continue on with like it just makes it easier because you do avoid probate. You avoid a lot of those problems. And,
right.
Because going through probate can destroy some of the wealth, some of the value of these assets. And when you've got a special needs child, that can be especially devastating having to go through probate. So having a trust set up ahead of time is probably a really good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And those trusts do protect the assets they hold as well, I believe, from most state asset tests. And then the other thing with the ABLE accounts, this actually just changed with the new tax law. Now, if you earn a certain amount of income, it's still very low. You can actually save in excess of the like $15,000 a year that you're usually allowed to save. And that's a big deal because for people who collect SSI, you can only make between $700 and $800 last time I checked a month. But if you're able to immediately put your paycheck into your ABLE account, you're able to bring in a little bit more money and still collect SSI benefits. So it's a very marginal improvement, but it is a major step in the right direction as far as disability rights advocacy goes.
Okay, yeah. So now let's turn away from providing for your child, which is very important. We want to make sure that we provide for our children and for our special needs children. But what do you do for yourself? Like, how are you preparing? You know, you talk about putting away for your child, talking about putting away as much as you possibly can. How are you balancing that with your own needs for retirement and for living and even for potentially caregiving during retirement? How do you plan for that? How do you balance those needs?
Quite honestly, not very well. I am saving for my own retirement. Like I said, a major goal of mine is to get to a point where I can max out all of my tax advantage retirement accounts every year and then get to a point where I'm looking at more of these things like a special needs trust and potentially opening up an ABLE account. because of the way that my state's benefits are structured right now at my daughter's age, I don't have to worry about too many asset tests. But I just keep a laser focus on what's fiscally and mathematically the biggest priority right now. And when I get to a point where I can cross other bridges, I will.
Now, you mentioned being like the only breadwinner, the sole provider in your family. You mentioned, you know, pretty much being on your own, plus you have kind of a protracted work schedule. So what kind of work do you do? Do you have, like, are you doing freelancing? Are you side gigging? Do you have like a real job? Like, how do you get that income? How do you manage to bring in that income and make sure that you have something to put away and also something to take care of your family's current needs?
It's a challenge. I have been working online with that as my primary income since 2015. I do freelance writing. I run my website, Femme Frugality. I also recently wrote a book and get royalties from that. And yeah, I run campaigns and do consulting too, pretty much anything online in the personal finance space. I try to stay aware of everything that's going on and kind of keep my skills current across all those areas. So I do a lot of that. And a major thing for me has just been sticking firm to my rates. I know how much I need to earn to only work X amount of hours a week. I'd be lying if I said there weren't some weeks that I didn't put in massive overtime and then other weeks where I just had to kind of pull back a little because of what was happening in front of me. But really that flexibility and something I wasn't really aiming for, building my own home-based business because all of my work is remote, has turned out to be a huge asset because I can be here for my kid while also writing my own schedule and allowing myself the time to make up hours I may potentially miss because of all the therapies and everything.
Now, when you are trying to decide how much to set aside, I know you said pretty much everything.
Right.
But do you ever take a little time out to take a step back and say, all right, I need to have a little bit of fun and enjoyment in my life? You know, how does that fall in? Like, how do you work on that as well?
Absolutely. It's kind of odd to be answering these questions at this time. I'm actually almost through a divorce here. So my finances are kind of like up in the air and not as religiously perfect as I usually like them to be. But I noticed that one thing the past few years that I've been prioritizing is really travel, even if that's travel not with my children. And one thing that I think really forced me to do that now, while I'm in my early 30s, while I have young kids, not traditionally at a time people, nonetheless women, go and do stuff like this. But I look at my future and everybody says, oh, well, you can do stuff like that when your kids get older. And I don't have that certainty. And so what I've decided to do is just do things that bring me joy and kind of take care of myself so I don't burn myself out over and over again. And for me, one of those big things is travel and seeing more of the world and exposing myself to other people and their experiences.
And I think that's a really good point because a lot of the time when we talk about investing, when we talk about taking care of our assets, when we talk about growing our wealth, a lot of the time we forget about the importance of investing in ourselves, the importance of right. You know, our own personal like wellness. And that's kind of an asset as well. And finding that balance so that we can make sure that we're investing in ourselves and moving forward with our lives and personal development. Not just constantly kind of pushing away. And I did want to circle back to what you said earlier. You said that FIRE wasn't a huge goal of yours because, you know, you're looking at it in a practical sense in terms of, will you ever get there? Because you do have this obligation to your special needs child and you are interested in giving her the best possible life. But is there a way for you to kind of, in a way, create your own lifestyle, even if you're not necessarily like retiring early?
If I ever figure out the answer to that, I will let you know. Honestly, at this point in my life, yes and no. We all always have the agency to make the decisions that we want to make. For example, I chose to make a kind of weird financial decision last year, and I moved my children to a different school district where it's more expensive to live. But that's a better decision for my family because my child needs that. So I can move money around and make things happen in order to make things happen for her. And then for myself, I think really lately, the travel thing has been huge for me. as far as taking care of myself, but it doesn't have to be. I travel free a lot. I have friends in a lot of places that I stay with, and I travel hack a little bit, but it doesn't have to be that expensive. You don't have to go across the globe. You can just set up a spa night for yourself, or like books, or like get a babysitter and just go out and do something with your friends. If you don't prioritize those things, you're going to get to a point where you're just burnt out and incapable of making money, and things get worse in situations like that.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that that holds true whether you're talking about your situation with your special needs child or any other item with money. I mean, a lot of the time we get so caught up in the idea we had to put every spare penny toward investing in retirement or every spare penny toward saving or whatever it is. And we forget that it can actually get, or we think, oh, well, I've got to work all the time and make all the money. And any hours spent watching TV is a complete waste. But in reality, we need those things to recharge. We need those things to be able to move forward. I agree. I mean, a few years ago, I certainly don't know what it's like to be the mother of a special needs child, but I remember a few years ago, I had a total breakdown. I was working hours and hours a day, and it didn't matter how much money I was making because I wasn't doing anything. You know, I was putting money away, but it wasn't enriching my life at that point. And so I think finding that balance is hugely important. And then I like what you talked about shifting your money around, moving your money around to where it's going to do the most good for your family. And whether that means moving to where you can get a better school district for your special needs child, or whether it's about, like, you know, I moved across the country, came to a low cost of living state in a relatively small town because I knew that I'd have support from family. And also my son would have, you know, some opportunities at school if he came here. So, you know, making those decisions and moving that money around, whether you're, you know, deciding to put it in a Roth IRA or whether you're putting it in a taxable investment account or whatever you're doing with it, it's really about creating that life and doing what's best for your family's wellness as well as their financial future.
Absolutely. And with that kind of geo-arbitrage idea, I think it's really interesting, especially because when you have a disabled child or you're disabled yourself, when you cross state lines, you can start living in a very different world as far as quality of life and health go, as far as what's provided via state benefits. Even if you have private insurance, sometimes it doesn't cover some of the most important things.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And so, like, when your choices are limited, or maybe you want to move close to family or stay close to family, but you can't because it's just not fiscally viable when you take into consideration healthcare costs. Sometimes I feel like my life and my decisions are not my own in, like, my deepest fiscal sad moments, right?
Right.
Like, it would be so nice to move to, like, some tropical beach somewhere on pennies, like, but that's not a reality or a possibility for me and my family. But that's okay, because we are going to live a beautiful life within the choices and the parameters that we have available to us. And at the end of the day, that's all any of us can do.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for joining us today and giving us a spark of hope and a little insight into what it's like to prepare financially when you have special needs children. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about where they can find you online?
Absolutely. I am on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram as @FemFrugality. You can find my site, FemFrugality.com. And you can also find the book, The Feminist Financial Handbook, on Amazon.
Hey, Money Tree Podcast listeners. We've had a great run over the last 5 years. We've had lots of great guests over that time. Guests like Joe Saul Sehy, Susie Orman, Art Laffer, Bert Malkiel, Peter Schiff, and more. We've also had lots of great content, like What Happens When Somebody Steals $500,000 from You, Tax Loopholes of the Rich, Investing Like a Billionaire, Why Men and Women Approach Investing Differently, How to Outlive Your Money, Tax Liens, Peer-to-Peer Lending, Asset Protection, and more. We've had lots of great questions from you, our audience, as well. But now we need your help. We want to know what you want to listen to more of, what topics, guests, and content you value most. This is your chance, Money Tree Podcast listeners. We don't frequently ask, but when we do, the door is wide open for you to give us your thoughts, good, bad, or ugly. What do you want to hear more of? What do you want to hear less of? All of this helps us make a better show for you. So many of you have already provided your feedback, and we really appreciate it. This is going to make an exciting 2019 of great content ahead. We're going to be closing the survey soon, so make sure you leave your feedback now. If having a say in your favorite podcast isn't enough, we're also going to be providing monthly promotions to anyone on our email list. The recent promotion was an overwhelming success. We've received lots of great feedback and input from our listeners. We're going to continue to create great shows for you, and they'll be focused on the content that you suggested. Each month, we'll have a new promotion. We can't tell you what we have in store for future promotions, but I know that you're going to be excited. We have some special opportunities that money just can't buy. We're excited to bring these new episodes to you throughout 2019. But in order to qualify for these great promotions that we have coming up, we're going to need to hear from you. However, in order to qualify, you're going to need to sign up for our email list first. When you do, you'll have an additional chance to win by completing our Money Tree Podcast survey. Go to moneytreepodcast.com/survey2019 to give us your feedback and for additional chances to win. We'll be posting the name of the winner on our website. So if you've entered the promotion, please check the website to see if you've won. We have some great shows lined up in the near future with some special guests that you're not going to want to miss. I can't wait to publish these interviews. So go to moneytreepodcast.com/survey2019 to sign up, and we'll enter you into our monthly promotion. Thanks again for listening, and remember, invest in your life.
Welcome to the panel portion of this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast, and I am joined by Kirk Chisholm. Hey, Kirk, how are you today?
Good. How you doing, Miranda?
I'm okay. This is kind of an interesting topic because I think a lot of the time we don't really think about trusts as a way to preserve wealth and pass it down. I know that neither of us are like really deep into trusts, but just in general, what are some of the main advantages you see with trusts, Kirk?
Well, trusts are an interesting thing. I think they're, you can kind of take them from both angles. One angle is trusts are a great way to provide protection from creditors, protection from people from themselves, depending on how the trust is set up. And it's really a creative way to put assets in a certain place and to protect them from many different risks. You know, then there's, of course, the other side of this, which is, I think, in many ways, trusts are overprescribed. You know, a lot of attorneys will say, oh, you need a trust for that. Oh, you need a trust for that. Well, now that the rules around the limits for how much people can pass on to their heirs are much higher, it eclipses most people's need for estate planning in the way that they used to be when they were like, you know, $1 million a person. So for estate planning, trusts are not as needed as they were before, but they're still extremely valuable if they're used properly. So I think it just honestly just really depends on how they're being used and what the purpose is.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point because a lot of the time you listen to people who are like, oh, well, if you want to protect your assets, you have to have a trust. You know, like you said, it's kind of overprescribed. It's not the only way to protect your assets. It's not the only way to make the most of what you have. So if you're not looking into a trust, if you're not looking at a way to use a trust to protect your assets, what are some of the things that you can do beyond trusts to make a difference in your portfolio, make a difference in your long-term wealth?
In many ways, protecting assets is extremely important. And for some people that know they need to protect assets, like, you know, we work with a number of doctors who have, let's say, some unknown liability out there. For things like that, insurance is really important. So protecting yourself with insurance from any sort of outstanding liability, like professionals, sometimes they have E&O insurance, which is errors and omissions insurance. Like we have that. We have other types of insurance depending on what your role is. You know, like if you're on a board, you might have some sort of insurance to protect you as a board member, withstanding gross misconduct, which usually is not covered. But generally, normal course of events, people carry insurance to protect themselves against any personal liability. So that's one way that people can do that. Depending on your industry, most likely there'll be specialized policies to accommodate you. Another way that people can do it is they can keep assets separate. So, you know, if you're married, sometimes that's not possible, but some people are maybe married, some may be single but living together. There's different ways to do it. Maybe you pass on money to your kids, different ways people do it to protect assets. They just keep assets out of their personal name. So things like that actually are beneficial because if you get sued, they're not going to sue your kids for the money unless you sent your kids the money after you got sued, which case that might be, I believe it's fraudulent conveyance. So things like that would be a problem. But other things like, let's just say if you have rental property, I think a lot of listeners here are interested in real estate. So rental property, insurance can cover some part of that, some sort of slip and fall. Also, what real estate owners will do is they'll own the LLC inside of a trust or a, the property, they'll own it inside of a trust or an LLC. So what a lot of real estate investors will do is they'll set up an LLC and they'll put their property in it. So effectively, it isolates the liability into that asset. So let's say, for an example, one of the renters, let's say you've done a bad job at finding renters and you have a bad renter, you know, they're tearing up the place and they decide to stop paying rent. And you know, the types, they're just people you don't want. And let's say they have a quote unquote slip and fall on the property because they just don't like you and they sue you. Well, let's say you've got 10 different properties. The last thing you want is all 10 of those properties to be subject to that lawsuit. You know, they come up with some ridiculous number of $100 million because my back hurts. You want to be protected. So the LLC, typically, if it's done right, will protect other assets. It will isolate that liability into that one property. Now, that property may be exposed. So let's say they win the lawsuit. Let's say you're liable and they win the lawsuit for $100 million, but your property is only worth $100,000. Well, most times, assuming depending on how the ruling comes down, most times that liability would be isolated to that property. So maybe they take the property from you and that's the most that could happen. Oh, well, right. You know, that's too bad. I mean, no one wants to lose their property, but
right.
at least it doesn't lose your entire net worth. That's another way that people do it. Actually, a funny side note, which I think the listeners would be interested in, is that back in the, I think it was the 70s or 80s. So financial service companies, investment banks particularly, used to be set up as partnerships. So if you did really well, you became a partner and you shared in the profits of the company. When they were partnerships, they were very well run because a partnership means you equally benefit, but you're also equally liable for all the risks that the partnership is involved with. What's interesting is if what happened in 2008 happened to a partnership, every single partner would be individually liable for all the liabilities personally. So if you're worth $100 million and, you know, it's held outside of the partnership, that gets clawed back into the partnership as a personal liability. So what happened in, I think it was the 90s, a lot of these firms became corporations. So those liabilities, those personal liabilities disappeared, and now they can take as much risk as they wanted. And if the firm blew up, oh, well, the firm blew up, at least I have my money.
From that kind of standpoint, it kind of really sucks for us because that leads to privatized profits and socialized risk, which, you know, as we saw, bailouts and whatnot. But at the same time, if it's your own personal assets and you're setting up your own business or you're looking for ways to protect yourself, separating that out makes a lot of sense. When you have a business, you want to be able to separate out that liability and you want to be able to separate that so that you are not, you know, your personal assets aren't subject to whatever anybody comes after you for. And I really like how you point out insurance, because insurance is not super sexy and it's not super great. But like you said, it's a huge part of asset protection, because whether it's your homeowner's insurance or your auto insurance or your health insurance, without insurance to kind of help offset costs that come with catastrophe, that could really damage your personal net worth.
Yeah. Insurance is something that no one likes to talk about and nobody wants to buy. It's not bought, it's sold. Really what insurance is it's a form of risk management. We're really good at risk management. We don't do a lot of insurance because there's many ways to do risk management without insurance. But in many cases, it is important, and any business owner will know that they probably have insurance somewhere along the line on their business, because there's a whole bunch of liabilities that come up when you're doing business. It's just naturally occurring events. I mean, if you look at rental property, it's not really a business, but it kind of is, right? So it's the same thing. You've got renters, in your business, you've got customers. They can slip and fall. Your employees can do silly things and steal money. It's really important to cover your unknown liabilities. And in many ways, insurance is cheap. Not all insurance is, but most insurance is pretty cheap considering what you're getting for it. So I think it's a really important part of the puzzle. It's not the only part, but it's an important part to consider. Because even a liability, I mean, I'm in Massachusetts and setting up an LLC is like $500 a year. That's not cheap for just setting up an LLC. I mean, some states are pay it maybe like $50 one time and that's it. But, you know, my state decided that they needed the money, I guess. So, you know, setting up entities, insurance, all of that's really important. But then there's other things too. I mean, kind of come back to trust a little bit, but some people use trust as a way to shield assets because there's really two parts to this. The protection of assets, one part comes from protecting them and the other part comes from hiding them. Now, I don't mean hiding them from the government, not paying taxes because that's illegal. But what I'm talking about is hiding them from creditors. I've heard some funny stories like you go to like the Cook Islands and set up an entity and they may know you have it there, but they'll never, ever get the money because the legal system is set up so that you can't sue from outside the country. So it's really asset protection or, you know, some people used to use Swiss bank accounts or things like that, which are no longer.
Caymans.
The Caymans. There you go. There's another one. I know you have your fortune stash there, Miranda.
Right. It's interesting to me, you know, the lengths that people go to stash the money and try to move it around. But for a lot of regular folks, I mean, that's just a lot of effort, a lot of work, and it doesn't really help you much, right? As far as I shouldn't say like real people, but like the vast majority of us. I don't know. Kirk, do you have a secret bank account somewhere?
I wish I did, Miranda. I wish I had that Swiss bank account. That would be phenomenal. It's interesting because you kind of always have to balance the risk to reward. We have a lot of people who call us. You're like, oh, I want to shelter money. I want to put it offshore. I'm like, how much you got? You know, it ends up being some number under $1 million. I'm like,
right?
That's not worth the effort. So if you want to have a really solid asset protection strategy offshore, and there are people, you can do it legally. Some of these people are trying to do it illegally, but you can do it all legally. And there's a number of firms that'll do that. Maybe we'll have one on show as I'm kind of thinking about this. The reality is let's say you decided to go put your money in the Caymans. Well, you've got to fly down there, which maybe spend some time down there as a business trip. That's not such a bad thing. But, you know, it's going to cost you money to do all of this. If you're trying to protect like $100,000, there's easier ways to do that. If you're trying to protect $100 million, it's worth the money to put in the time to protect your assets. And I think it comes down to a matter of degree of what assets you're trying to protect, who are you trying to protect them from. And it means, you know, we have some clients that are highly complex and they've got like 10 different entities all over the place to protect their assets and they have no assets in their name personally. They have trusts, they have LLCs, they've got, you know, there comes a point of complexity where it's just too hard to keep up with it all. And you got to hire a bookkeeper just to keep up with it. So there is a point of absurdity where you're doing too much and it may not be worth it. It may just be easier just to have a simpler asset protection strategy. But, you know, that's how these attorneys make good money with the wealthy people is they make it complex. And I'm not saying it's not valid, but it's just, I think sometimes it's more complex than it needs to be.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So finally, one of the things that I really kind of looked at with Bryn was, you know, talking about balancing all this stuff. We're talking about like asset protection, talking about setting up ways to protect your assets and kind of keep that intact. But, you know, also there's that kind of balance and then also that kind of real life emotional side of money. So I just thought, Kirk, when you're talking about your own money, when you're talking about balancing for the future, when you're talking about trying to provide your children with opportunities, how do you balance that with making sure that you have what you need for retirement in the future and that you have a little bit for like living life now? I mean, I know you just went on vacation. So how do you balance all of that?
I don't know if I'd call it vacation, Miranda. You know, I mean, I got two young boys. It's, you know, they got a lot of energy. It's vacation's not what it used to be.
All right. So you just went on an exciting trip.
Yeah. I call it home somewhere else, really. It's just home with a different visual perspective. You know, it's interesting. And actually, this brings up another side point of this, which is retirement. And retirement accounts are another great asset protection strategy because IRAs and 401ks in particular have a really strong asset protection built into them. So that's why a lot of people will put money in retirement accounts just to shelter that. But I think getting back to your earlier point of the emotional side of money, I think for all of us, it's a balancing act. We're not made of money. I mean, some of us are, but not me. But a lot of us have to work for a living. And we have families, and you're trying to provide for your family, and you're trying to do the best you can and give them, you know, if you have kids, you're trying to give them everything that you can as a parent. It's a really tough balancing act. But and it's not just money. I know this show's about money, but the best form of currency out there is not money, it's time. We can't make any more of that. And that's really one of the bigger challenges is like you're trying to produce to make sure your family is provided for, but you're also trying to give your time. So balancing that is really challenging, I find. And certainly for a lot of clients we work with, they're also challenged with that as kind of a point of reference. So there's a category we call like mass affluent.
Oh, yes.
People under 2 million, maybe between half a million and 2 million in net worth, or let's call it that for mass affluent. Now, people like that, that are close to retirement, they have a very distinct need. Many of them have done a great job at saving through their entire life. They've worked hard, they've saved, they're close to retirement, they're ready to enjoy the fruits of their labor. And let's say they've got, I don't know, like $1 million in net worth. A lot of them find it really challenging to change from working and saving to not working and spending. I think a lot of people make light of this, but this is a huge psychological shift. I mean, you've spent 40 years working and saving, and now all of a sudden you're going to flip a switch and retire and start spending. Most people can't do that. They can't just flip that switch because their head is set in such a way that they don't want to spend money, they want to save it. And one of the biggest risks that people have in retirement, this is never talked about anywhere that I've seen. The biggest risk in retirement that people have is not doing something significant with their money. You know, you save $1 million and you're going to retire. Why are you pinching pennies in retirement? Like, enjoy it. You've spent all your life saving it. Enjoy it. When you're 90 years old, you're not going to be gallivanting the world, traveling on hiking trips. You're going to be living a different lifestyle. So enjoy it while you can. And I think that's a big challenge for most people. They can't get over that hurdle, and they end up kind of wasting some of the best years of their life. And we don't even call it retirement. We call it phase two of their life.
I like that. Phase two.
Yeah. Because the word retirement just has a negative connotation that like, oh, you're out to pasture. It's phase two. You can do anything you want. You don't have to work. You don't have to provide. You have money. You can do whatever you want. What do you want to do? And most people haven't even thought of that. They haven't sat down and just said, what do I want to do? What's my bucket list? What do I want to spend my life doing? You know, I've always wanted to paint or learn an instrument or whatever it is. Now's the time. What are you waiting for? You know, and I think most people get stuck in that and they think, oh, I'm not going to have enough money. And they end up dying with like $1 million in the bank. Like, that's a travesty. I mean, yeah. In a perfect world, you'd have zero in the bank and you just die at the moment you spend your last penny. But of course, we can't plan for that.
I love that approach, though, because like, you know, you hear people all the time, I'm going to pass this large amount of money on to my posterity. And I'm just like, nah, I'm going to spend it. I've already told my son, don't expect a nice inheritance from me, my friend. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point, though, is that a lot of people do get caught up and they have a hard time spending the money, and it's hard for them to like kind of break out of that. And even now, like, I mean, I like to go on trips. I like to travel. I like to go out to eat sometimes. I enjoy living life. But there are times when I'm just like, when I do sort of catch myself too in that kind of scarcity mindset going, oh gosh, can I really spend this much now? Should I really spend this much now? But then, like you said, I mean, you can always make more money, but you can't make more time. One of my brothers, you know, he's got his family. He's been working really hard. He's working 70, 80 hours a week as a lawyer, you know, like, oh, I'm going to be junior partner. But, you know, in the last few months, he's taken a step back and said, but why? What is X extra dollars going to do for me? And what am I missing with my children?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I mean, we get stuck in this work mode where we're just working our tail off to provide and we're doing everything we can. And a lot of people, we don't spend time to reflect. We don't spend time to I call it mindfulness time. You know, we're just kind of mindful of what's going on around us and how we're feeling and what the needs are. And I saw this growing up. I mean, I was a Gen Xer and we were latchkey kids where both parents worked and you never really saw the kids, and the kids pretty much took care of themselves. It's sad because it's like, what's the point of having kids if you don't get to spend time with them and raise them as people? And believe me, we all have our own challenges and in working, right? And a lot of parents have to work two jobs with both parents just to provide, but we're not living to work. I mean, work is actually a necessity of human nature. Like, we need to produce. That's kind of what helps us grow. But also you need to be able to take a step back, because if you spend 40 years working to save and then you're going to decide, all right, now I'm going to enjoy life, you've kind of missed it.
Right.
You're supposed to enjoy it all along the way, right? It was that Ferris Bueller quote, you know, if you don't stop to look around once in a while, you might miss it.
Right.
And it's so true. I think a lot of us get stuck in that. We don't stop to look around once in a while. And then my kids are at the point, I'm just like, where did all those years go?
Right.
I feel like I didn't spend enough time with them, even though I did. I'm just like, wow, like I need to spend more time with them, because soon they'll be in high school and college and they won't want to see us anymore.
Right. Know? Yes. Yes. I'm feeling that myself right now. So, you know, and I was happy the other day, like on Facebook, a memory from a couple years ago, a spring break road trip that my son and I went on. And I was like, oh yeah, that was a really great epic road trip. You know, this year for spring break, it was a little less epic. He's a little less interested in going on a 9-day road trip with mom and more interested in, well, how quickly can we do this? And how quickly can I be back with my friends? Which is, you know, natural. It's a natural part of growing up. It's not like it's something that you have to be super upset about. When we get to this point, I'm glad that I can look back and say, oh, these are all the cool things we did together. And someday he'll remember them again. So, you know, we have the pictures, we have the fun stuff. And so I think that's a really, really good point. And with that said, our time has seemed to be slipping away. It's probably time to say goodbye. But do make sure that you head on over to moneytreepodcast.com/contact, where you can fill out a form and you can send us a question if you want. We haven't done listener questions in a while, so go ahead, get in your listener questions. You can also send us listener questions through the Facebook page, or you can at us on Twitter at MTI Podcast. So go ahead and follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and we'll start answering those listener questions again. Also, don't forget to subscribe. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. So when you subscribe, you get a fresh new episode every Friday morning. It magically appears on your device. So that's super great. We have a survey up right now. It is moneytreepodcast.com/survey. Please fill out the survey. Let us know what you want from us, and also give us your email address. We have some fun contests going on, some fun giveaways, so that you can be eligible for those. And then also make sure that you give us your email so that we can keep you updated on the latest news with the Money Tree Investing Podcast. So once again, remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.